First of all, say that I am very glad that this meeting has been organized, and I am also happy that there are so many who are interested in animal welfare. Of course, in New Zealand and in these countries, you hardly ever see animals. At least I don't see any animals. Perhaps there are a few people who have some pet animals, and there must be many millions of animals in the farms. And one knows of this country, especially as a country for farming and sheep and so on. But we don't see animal life as such very much. But I'm told that before the people came to New Zealand, there were no wild animals at all in this country, which is a very remarkable fact. I suppose it's mainly because it's very cold. But even in cold countries, there are polar bears and seals and so on. So I'm expected to see something of that kind of thing here. Well, anyhow, whether the animals are imported animals or original animals, the fact remains that the animal world in the whole world is just one world. I think there's a division of nationality for human beings, and I make no division of nationality for animals. And my interest in animals is just animals, not Indian animals or New Zealand animals or Australian animals and so on. I feel that this subject of animal welfare is very, very important, not only to the animals, but also to human beings. Because if we really, human beings, want a happy world, the only way to make the world happy is to do something for the animal world too. And unfortunately, humanity is so extraordinarily selfish, because it thinks only of itself and its own welfare. And even when we think of preventing cruelty, we only want to prevent cruelty up to a point. But beyond that point, if it means the sacrifice of our own pleasures, then we don't mind what cruelties exist. And I find, wherever I travel, there are problems connected with animals in every country in the world. Sometimes people say, oh, I see so much cruelty, say, for example, in India. Of course, it is true. You will see a great deal of cruelty for many reasons. One is, there are 400 million people there as against 200 million people here. And that means equal number of animals of every kind. Secondly, you see animals more moving about with human beings. You see them in the streets, you see them used in the bullock carts, you see the donkeys, you see the horses, because you still have horse carriages there, and dogs, stray dogs, and so on. And so we are all the time seeing the animals. In Western countries, we don't see. That's one of the reasons why, generally, in Eastern countries, they think there is no cruelty to animals in Western countries. Many people think. But I, who have studied the subject very much, have come to the conclusion that every country has its own cruelties, and there are varieties of cruelties in the world, and I don't want to make a distinction of the superiority or inferiority, because what matters to me is that there is cruelty and man is selfish, and it is our duty to try to remove this cruelty. Even if it is little, well, that little must be removed. And unfortunately, humanity hasn't yet come to that realization. We are all talking about peace in the world, we are talking about brotherhood, we are talking about creating a one world, but it seems to me that the whole conception of one world is really a world for human beings, not a one world for animal world. Until humanity comes to a consciousness that the one world means one life, and we begin to realize not only our responsibility to the animals, but also feel their consciousness, their pain, their suffering, their sorrow as our own. Until we feel that, I don't think that we can say humanity is really civilized. I hope you will not think I am very rude to human beings, but according to me, human beings are not yet civilized. Because as long as there is cruelty, I think we are uncivilized. And really, it is surprising to see how much cruelty does exist in the world along many lines. Supposing you think in terms of food, look at the amount of cruelty that exists for the sake of food. Of course, you must think, many people feel that kindness to animals has nothing to do with diet. There are many vegetarians perhaps who may think, well, it's enough to be a vegetarian and then that's finished. You don't need to bother about the animals anymore. There are many who think we must be kind to animals, but it doesn't matter eating them. To me, to be kind to animals is a complete thing. It begins at the beginning, and as far as is humanly possible, we must avoid it in every possible way. That doesn't mean, of course, that there is any feeling of superiority or any feeling of dogmatism, because I do think each individual has to come to his own conclusion and to do what he thinks is right. And he, no matter how far he goes, I am grateful for that much, because I feel that every aspect of animal welfare must be included in our work and in our consciousness. But certainly, in all that pertains to humanity, in the name of food, in the name of sport, in the name of science, in the name of religion, in the name of industry, in all kinds of ways, it's humanity is exploiting the animal world. The chief reason why humanity exploits the animal world is because his basic philosophy is wrong. Because basically, we have come to think that animals are created for man. I don't know why we should think that God has such a high opinion of human beings that he thinks they must be provided with animals for them to use as they like. I don't know. Mind you, I fully understand there may be places where animals have to be killed, where there are no vegetables, nothing else is available, I understand it. But I simply do not understand when we have begun to think why we cannot really change our attitude to the animals. Now the first thing that has to be done is to change our attitude to the animals. And another important thing is to love the animals. Even many people who work for animal welfare, honestly, I find they will work for the cause but without the least feeling for the animals. Sometimes it has happened. I don't know whether it is here, but certainly in many places, say in India too, where the SPCA for example, many people join the SPCA because it has become a place of social importance. It has become something like saying, well, you know, I read Shelley, which means, well, I am a cultured person. You know, I am interested in animal welfare. I joined this animal welfare movement. You know, it's a kind of prestige value. And therefore, there is no real love. But I won't say that it is true always, because there is also a great love for the animals. But the first important thing is to feel for the animals and to love them. Because if you don't have that love, then it is impossible really to change the attitude of humanity towards the animal world. And the most important thing is to change our attitude. If we don't change our attitude, I'm absolutely sure that we shall never deserve to have peace. We are always wanting peace. We feel the world is war, there is injustice. Well, how can we cry against injustice of one man over another when we are also perpetuating injustice to those creatures which cannot defend themselves? Fundamentally, it is a form of exploitation, because we take advantage of them when they cannot defend themselves. And that, if we progress, we gradually also take advantage of people who cannot defend themselves. And this is how it grows. And I believe that the love of animals is ultimately the saving of man himself. I always say that animal welfare is human welfare, because by loving animals, by feeling for them, human beings are better for it. We become more human by it. Until we learn to love, we are not human. We may have human bodies, we may walk like human beings and talk like human beings, but that which makes us human is that humaneness within us. It is only when the heart is moved can we really call ourselves human. And therefore, I really feel that we must not think of animal welfare as to do with only with animals, because we are really helping humanity by working for the animals too. I am saying this, I suppose it doesn't happen in your country, but in many places people rather ridicule you for doing animal welfare work, or they think it doesn't matter, or it's unimportant, or they laugh at it, and so on. And sometimes they argue human welfare first, animal welfare afterwards. Let us help humanity first, they say. Many people have said that to me. Well, I say, yes, of course. By making human beings more human, then I am helping humanity first. And therefore, there is no first or last. We cannot compartmentalize our hearts and say this will come first and that will come later. In fact, I find those people who even speak about human welfare are not particularly interested even in humanity. If they really loved humanity with all their hearts, then I can understand. But very often, they just belittle because they do not realize the value of the work. Now, there are many, many ways in which humanity is so extraordinarily cruel, either individually or in a mass way. When it is mass cruelty, we begin to accept it. We think it doesn't matter. It's not cruel. We don't think. We will feel when a cat is tortured, we'll say, how cruel. But when dozens of people go with guns to hunt animals, for example, we don't think anything about it. Large number of people don't think, because we have accepted it. You know, we have got accustomed to certain cruelties. There are what you might call cruelties by habit, and when we come into cruel contact with such cruelties with which we are not accustomed, then we are shocked. And if we are accustomed, we are not shocked. And what we people have to do, if we really feel for animals, is to sit down and think. Now, what are all the things I am doing to which I have become so accustomed that I haven't thought about till now? We all have what I might call blind spots, nationally or even individually. And we are not aware of ourselves. Now, that is one of the things I feel that we have to start thinking. And it's only then we will realize how many cruelties that we are accustomed to. When I went to Spain, it never occurred to the Spanish people to think that bullfight is cruel. I said, what is cruelty in it? The bull enjoys it, you know. That's one of the great sayings that they have. The bull enjoys it. I said, well, in that case, you do the same thing to another man which you would do to a bull and find out from him whether he enjoys it. Well, then they laugh. Why? Because even those who realize it don't want to give it up. First, it's a national thing. It is something we are used to, and to do something different may make us appear ridiculous, and perhaps we shall lose a lot of money. Because, you know, the biggest god in the world is money. And when you interfere with man making money, then he will hesitate. And then he said, well, I like to be kind to animals as long as it doesn't interfere with certain things to which I am attached. This is what I have found. And I am not speaking in a general way, because I tell you literally I have come into contact with thousands and thousands of people with whom I have talked even personally and have investigated this whole question. And I do find there is this attitude, and this is the thing that we have to change. And if only we could abolish this money making at the cost of animals, at least 60% of cruelties would be diminished. Look at not only the hunting. Look, when I was in Australia, they had huge headlines, 15,000 Russians who are going for the whaling industry. Well, nobody thought about it. They all think it's fun. It's remarkable how the Russians are enjoying themselves and so on and so on. Nobody thought, what sort of a sport is this? It hasn't occurred. And this is the kind of thing we see, and maybe in your own newspapers too, you may begin to see certain things which you may feel very deeply. And we all have a responsibility towards changing conditions in our own world. Now in India, I would like to talk to you a little bit about the work in India. In India, you know that there has been, for a very, very long time, a general attitude to animals, which accepts the fact that the animals also have a right. But don't think that, in spite of that attitude, that there is no cruelty in India. Unfortunately, first, because there are not only millions of people and millions of animals, secondly, because of poverty, thirdly, because of lack of education, and all these things, I can positively say that to the ordinary animal in the street, compared to 30, 40 years ago, actually the cruelty has even increased rather than decreased. Because that spiritual background which made people feel that the animal is part of your family, that because that is disappearing and a more materialistic approach is coming, gradually they begin to think, well, animals are for our use. And I have felt this very, very deeply. And that's why when I went into Parliament, I brought a bill which I felt was basically in keeping with the philosophy and the outlook of India, and brought the law up to date. The law that existed before was in 1860. It included only certain animals, only domestic animals, and domestic animals only in certain places, and that's all. And it did not include all aspects of animal welfare. And I felt that every aspect of animal welfare should be the responsibility of man and of the nation, the parliament and the government. Therefore, certainly one of the laws which I brought was in regard to hunting. No hunting for pleasure, because there are tribal people who do hunt for their food. No hunting for pleasure. And that I wish that could be abolished everywhere, because it's most unfortunate. Of course, some people will say animals will overrun the place. Well, we don't find that all animals which are not hunted are overrunning. And we shall see when that particular time comes. But certainly man does hunt for his pleasure. He is not hunting for saving the country. And we find also the world is going to be the poorer, because you see wonderful animals are disappearing from the face of the earth. And animals are certainly far more wonderful to see on earth than human beings. Hope you don't mind my saying it. I would much rather go into a forest and see a lot of animals. And they are more naturally beautiful, while we all have to make ourselves beautiful in so many varieties of ways, in a most unnatural way, while they are beautiful naturally. And instinctively too, although people often abuse when they want to be unkind and say, you are a beast, I feel like saying, if you call me a beast, that's a compliment. Because certainly in many ways they are far more evolved than we are in certain basic qualities. One of them is they have far better sense of gratitude and love than we have. I have seen human beings to whom you can be kind all your life, and perhaps some one little thing might hurt him and then he'll forget you completely, or in the time of your need he'll forget you. But the animal never does. And therefore there are many things which are so wonderful and we can learn. Animal mothers, for example, are certainly in many ways more beautiful than human mothers, especially modern mothers, because we don't have that wonderful quality that they have. But leaving aside all that, certainly animals and birds make earth a wonderful place, and without nature we shall certainly be orphans. We will not know how much we miss nature unless we do without it. And so it's a very sad thing to see how human beings are destroying animals for all sorts of purposes, including beauty. So much, look at the amount of the fur trade. Thank goodness the nylon has come into existence. And let us hope that has removed and reduced the fur trade. But even then people want real fur. They are not satisfied. Because at one time they said we want it for warmth. And now that they have got something which gives equal warmth, they say we want it for beauty. And now when we find something which is equally beautiful, they say we want it for prestige. And so really that is what is happening in the world. And then there is in India we have one particular thing which you don't have any other country, not only in India but in the Muslim countries too, that is the sacrifice of animals for religion. There are only two religions which sacrificed animals, that is the Hindu and the Muslim. The Mohammedans sacrificed in their homes, the Hindus in some of the temples. In the majority of part of India, they were tribal people, not cultured people. In Bengal, cultured people were sacrificing sheep, but they said, we sacrifice, but we also use it as our food. Whatever it is, the whole conception of sacrifice and the fact that you sacrifice to a being whom you consider as the mother, as a compassionate one, is some remnant of barbaric civilization which I feel must be abolished. And I am very happy to say that in many, 3/4 of India, it has been abolished. But I have not been able to bring a law for the whole of India, mainly because there are these religious differences, that is the Hindu and the Muslim. And the Mohammedans certainly are very strict about adhering to their religion, and so they will not give up. While the Hindus do change, and they are changing, and I hope that one particular state especially will bring a law in that respect. Then there is such a thing as the slaughterhouses. Well, if you see the slaughterhouses in the world, honestly, you will then realize what it is we are all living upon. It's something unbearable to think animals are being dragged to be killed just to give food to humanity. Well, I really cannot bear to think of it. In India too, we have horrible slaughterhouses. Here you have humane killing. I'm glad to say it's something to the good. But on the other hand, I do feel that humane killing is not merely the killing alone. You think humane killing means to make them unconscious first and let them die afterwards. But what happens till they become unconscious? What about the treatment of animals till they do? What about the way, one of the things which is very unpleasant for me is when I see young lambs, young calves being taken away, and that nature which has given these children to the animals, they do not have any chance for their own natural expression either. Well, these are the things that exist. In India, generally speaking, they won't kill the young animal because there's a kind of a sentiment that the young must be with its mother till it grows up a little longer. I regret to say some of these beautiful sentiments are disappearing, and our work very much is to see that these sentiments do not disappear, because when the sentiment is there, it will be possible to build on it. I often say to Indians that if only with the millions and millions of people who think as I do, if only you were to become practical in action, India could be changed. And that is the thing we have to do. And in Western countries, especially, if I may say so, of all the countries in the world, the country that is most animal welfare conscious that I have seen is England. Certainly in England, there is definitely a growing love for the animals, although they haven't completely accepted it in its wholesale way. But if the love is there, I feel maybe the other will come. I mean, for example, when it comes to experimentation of animals in laboratories and in the drug companies, or when it comes to the killing of animals or the meat trade, all these things must change. Because my own feeling is, this is my personal feeling, and I don't mind if any of you disagree with me, because nobody can be expected to agree in everything. My feeling is that if you really love animals, vegetarianism is the first basis of it. Because I believe in the British Vegetarian Society's motto, be kind to animals by not eating them. And that's a very good motto. That is really how I feel. Well, that hasn't come in England, but on the whole, there is a great love of animals which is growing there. And I hope and I believe ultimately maybe England will lead the way in this. And if India, which copies so many things Western, would copy some of the great pioneers who worked for animal welfare also, then I believe India will go far. So these, and also including the vivisection in all these different subjects, I brought in my bill in Parliament, and it caused quite a sensation actually. Everyone became animal welfare conscious during that particular time, and when Prime Minister intervened, he suggested there should be a committee. I was made the Vice Chairman of the committee. And we toured all over India. We went to see zoos, I went to see laboratories, I went to slaughterhouses, and many places of horror. And finally, now I have become a greater expert on cruelty than on kindness. I know more about what man does to animals in a cruel way, unfortunately, because I've learned, and today, every day I'm learning something new. I always think it's come to the end. I've learned everything that man can do. And suddenly somebody tells me, do you know this and that and the other? And then I am surprised and shocked how inventive man is when it comes to cruelty, and how lacking in inventiveness he is when it comes to positive ways of kindness. Well, this is the unfortunate thing, and we who are all of us interested in animal welfare, we have to make a very strong band of fearless workers, otherwise we cannot do anything for his cause. The result of all my tour in India was a report which was presented to Parliament, after which another bill came, which was a government bill, not my bill. And then one of the features of that government bill is called the Animal Welfare Board. We wanted very much that India should have an animal welfare board supported by government, specially for the promotion of kindness to animals. And that was unanimously accepted by the Parliament. And I happen to be now, since the last 1 year, the chairman of that board. And here's a sample of a magazine which we are just starting in India. It's a quarterly, which is going to be sent out by the board. And one of the activities of the board would be humane education, because we want to bring out children's books. We want to bring out books for students, or stories of animals, all kinds of ways and means of promoting kindness, so that it will be accepted in schools as textbooks by the education department. We also want to have films on kindness to animals, and we are trying to make some. And in all these ways, to promote, also to develop new institutions and animal welfare societies who will work for animal welfare all over India. This is the program of work which we have set before us in our country. And I hope it will not be long before we are able to make a little headway. We have difficulties there because of the poverty of the people, many millions of villages which we have to contact, and in many languages because they don't all speak English. So we have to use the radio, we have to use all kinds of means to bring the consciousness of the people. But I want to tell you that even amongst the poor, amongst those whom we may consider very ignorant, there is a very strong feeling of love for the animals. One of the questions that people always ask me is, why is it that the cows are wandering about in India instead of providing food for the millions? Well, the very idea that we think that if there are too many animals, the first thing you do is to eat. Do we do the same thing with human beings when our countries are overpopulated? I do not know. But it seems to me a very strange idea. Of course, to us, the cow is a symbol, really, originally, of all animals. And you must also understand that there is a basic idea of the worship of the cow for another reason. First of all, our cows are also different. They are extraordinarily beautiful, extraordinarily intelligent, chiefly because we have worshipped them. I have a theory that where you really love the animals, there the animals grow in beauty and in intelligence. And I think it is perfectly true. But anyway, man is the only creature that drinks milk after he is grown up. All creatures give up milk when they start to eat solid food. But we merely transfer from the mother's milk to the cow's milk. In fact, modern days, sometimes the babies don't have even mother's milk at all. They have only cow's milk. And therefore, in India, from the beginning, they began to call the cow the second mother. And there is always the great worship of the mother, because there is a very wonderful feeling towards the ideal of mother. And that is why there has been this growth of idea of the worship of the cow, and also because the cow is the symbol of every animal upon earth. Once there was a big fair where there were a large number of bullocks and cows exhibited. We have an enormous variety of cows. Every part of India has its own variety, and they are all extraordinarily beautiful. I remember one German gentleman, he was at one of my meetings, and somebody in the audience asked me a question, why do you worship the cow? And immediately this German gentleman got up and he said, how can you help it? Because when you look at them, you have to. That was his reply. Because evidently he himself became a very ardent lover of these. Well, anyhow, in India, in this particular fair, I remember one man had one of the most magnificent bulls that you can possibly imagine. And there was an American who wanted to buy that bull. He wanted to pay thousands of pounds for that one bull alone, because it was not only rare, but never has there been such a beautiful creature upon earth. And he wanted to take it. And the man said, I'll never sell this, no matter how much you give. He was a very poor man, earning very, very little, and yet he wouldn't sell it. I happened to be there and I said to him, why don't you sell? He says, why? It's part of my family. I won't dream of selling my child. It's exactly the same to me. Then I said, what do you do in your village when these animals grow old? And he said, what do you do with your grandmother when she grows old? That's exactly what I do with the animals, he said. I thought that was a good lesson that I learned from him, and that was his attitude. So you see, even amongst the poorer people, there is this sentiment, a great thing, a heritage which has lived in India. And I hope very much that because this spark is there, I can make it grow so that the feelings grow stronger. Unfortunately, while this is growing, there are also other things which are growing. One, for example, is this. In India, the modern days, they are definitely beginning to eat meat more than they used to. Because of the contact with Western civilization, so many young people go to the foreign countries, they learn. Not only that, the modern system of medicine has come very strongly into force in India. And the modern doctors from the WHO and FAO, and they all say that there will not be enough nourishment for the people unless they eat meat. And unfortunately, many of our Indians who are educated in Western ways accept these theories. And this is a very unfortunate thing. Another thing also which is growing are the number of laboratories for experimenting on animals, because of the help that is being given by the Rockefeller and other foundations for the development. But I can positively say that more than 70% of the experiments are in drug institutes, and mostly for the sake of making money, because I know that money plays a great part. The Salk vaccine was made from the monkeys sent from India. Millions of monkeys were exported from India. And when I was in America, I saw in the headlines the Salk vaccine was being thrown into the ocean. And two reasons was this. One, because they had too much and they would not reduce the price, so they were throwing it away. And then later on came a very large notice in one of the papers, which I have got, which said, well, it cures polio, it produces cancer. Well, actually, I think modern system of medicine is also experimenting upon human beings, because you notice so often what was considered a wonderful drug some years ago, they suddenly say, it's out, you must have something else. And they go on changing because they are trying to discover new things. But leaving aside the idea of humanity which they want to save, there is no doubt the commercial aspect, which is a very strong thing in regard to this. These are the things that are going on in the world. The whole conception of trading with animals, treating these animals as if they have no feelings and that we can do anything with them, the whole basic approach is completely wrong. And this is what I feel very, very strongly. I don't know how animal welfare conscious you are in New Zealand, but from what I have felt by traveling, I think in New Zealand and Australia, there are certainly a number of people who are interested, but as a whole, there is not that same feeling as I have seen in some places in Europe or in India. And I think that has to gradually grow. Well, I feel that it is so in every country in the world. We all have to work for animals. In Spain, it's one of the worst, because absolutely no feeling whatsoever. There's no sentiment about it. There's no love for the animal. And the animal is a miserable creature that exists. Well, I don't know what the animals can think of us. If only they could speak, we will know their opinion. And I am afraid we will feel ashamed when we read their opinion. As Mark Twain said, man is the only creature that blushes and needs to. And I think that's a very good sentence. Man is the only creature that needs to blush, because we should be ashamed of ourselves for what we do to the animal kingdom. And I hope in every possible way, in every religion, in every aspect of religion, in every society for brotherhood, in every society that's for human welfare, they will side by side work for the welfare of animals too. I would like to see in every country a law prohibiting the any kind of commercial use of animals. I can't expect them to say prohibit use of animals for food. I can't expect them to say prohibit animals for medicine. But certainly we can go step by step. That's one of the things I'm protesting in India. They were trying to open up a big slaughterhouse in Bombay in order not only to have more meat, but perhaps to export. Well, thousands of people had protest meetings against the government for that. Because they say it is bad enough that people are eating, but we don't want to be a meat market for the rest of the world. And that is absolutely true. Well, I won't go into details in regard to the thousands of cruelties that exist. We have, of course, many problems of our own. You may say how to find homes for the dogs or how to rescue dogs. But for us, that is not the problem because we have so many millions of dogs that we can't find homes for them. The municipalities are destroying them, some of them in a most cruel way. So we have to show how to do it in a less cruel way, to catch them without giving them suffering and to put them to sleep. Unfortunately, it is not possible to say, well, keep them all alive. But at the same time, there are a large number of Indians who are against killing. As a matter of fact, I myself feel very much against it. But they want to make a proposal of having clinics in different parts to see that every animal is spayed or castrated and so on. Well, we have to take up all these programs side by side. I'm telling you what our problems are. I dare say you have many problems of your own. I suppose the most important problem is the human problem. Not that there are problems connected with humanity, because this is a prosperous country, a happy country in all ways. The only problem humanity has is its indifference. And the very fact that we are indifferent makes us a problem. There is nothing worse in the world than to be indifferent and to feel satisfied. As I was saying, that it's a good thing if you have achieved humane killing, but the point is there humaneness before the killing? What is the treatment of animals? And what are the other problems also which you might have? Well, these are all the things that we all have to think together. And I feel that the animal welfare work is a worldwide work, and that we should all take interest in each other's work. I must say that many movements in Europe have helped me very much in India. And the RSPCA, for example, in London, has presented 2 mobile clinics to the Animal Welfare Board, which we are presenting to some organizations. And also an ambulance. We are starting shelters slowly, bit by bit. The work is starting. And it's because they feel the animal world is the one world. And that is the consciousness that we must all have. Because very often so much of cruelty happens because of trade between countries too. Look at the monkeys, export of monkeys from India. Well, that is a trade which is taking place. The man who exported monkeys has become one of the richest men and built almost a palace in London or in England, and he lives there. And I shudder to think how I would feel if I thought all the wealth or the house that I built is all built upon those horrible cruelties perpetrated upon those creatures which are sensitive, which feel as we do, which have even emotions as we have. It was once said by an animal expert that a developed animal is like a child of 6. Well, then if we are cruel to those animals, then you may take for granted we have been cruel to children of 6 years of age. That is how I think of it. Well, friends, I do not know whether I should go on talking to you any more on this subject, but I feel very, very deeply indeed that this is one of the greatest pieces of work that we can undertake in the world. Nothing could be greater than this. and somewhere, very silently perhaps, there is, I am sure, there is gratitude in the hearts of the animal world for every individual who stands up for them. And we have to learn to stand up for them. And therefore, I consider it my mission to do what little I can in my life for helping the animal world, which means I automatically help India, I automatically help humanity also. Whether I help them, not because I feel it's my duty, but because I can't do it, I can't help it. It's because I must help them. When I see what they are going through, sometimes I wish I was 20 persons or 30 persons so that I can work simultaneously in different places. I hope that there will be a complete awakening of this consciousness everywhere in the world. And when humanity has come to realize this, then that will be the first beginning of peace upon earth. And until then, I don't think we can ever expect it, because we must first learn the basic truth, that the highest truth of all is compassion. That is the highest religion of all. To me, compassion is not part of my religion, it is my religion. And that is how I feel about it. Well, I am very happy to have met you. If there are one or two questions you would like to ask, I'll be very happy to answer it.
Maybe fried
spinach. Strange animal spirit and fairly glowing colours. What would you consider the animals' attitudes towards each other, say feline attitudes?
Well, of course, there is a great deal of cruelty in the animal world too. I mean, for example, the tiger would eat the deer. First of all, you must remember that nature has made it possible for them to find food only in that particular way. But they never go beyond their nature. You never see them promiscuously killing at all times. And they don't invent thousands of ways of cruelty like we do. We harpoon a whale which bursts in its body and it struggles for hours before it dies in this whaling business. We drag the animals, we do all kinds of things. And besides that, we have got brains, we are supposed to be intelligent. And if we have intelligence, we should not say that we after all, the wild animals are eating other animals, why not we do the same thing? We are supposed to be better than they, are we not? So if we compare ourselves to them, then they might as well be called cruel too, and beasts, if you like.
Would you suppose a man should really try to keep nature in balance in the best way he could? For instance, now, coming from Canada, we had the rabies take the foxes, which used to control the rabbit numbers. The rabbits multiplied at a very great rate. At that time, I felt, well, there are other animals who eat pastures and so on. If you let it get away too far, it would be like Australia. You would eat everything up, even the wild animals, and have nothing to eat, the deer. So to keep things in balance, I would shoot some rabbits. But because of the rabies in the first place, I didn't eat. I would shoot them, but try to take always the heart shot or the head shot, which they instantly killed us. Just because if I let too many, there'd be soon too many rabbits, and that would not be good for rabbits nor anything else.
Well, you see, as I told you, there are problems connected with each country which you have to think about. But, for example, I have myself said to you about stray dogs in India. Unfortunately, I can't say to people, adopt all the dogs, because there are more dogs than people. But what I can say is, don't destroy them cruelly. You may have to do it, which is against your inclination, which is quite different. And therefore, there are problems in regard to each country which you have to face. But that is different from going out of your way to kill and destroy. And also, if I may say so, many problems that exist in the current world for man are problems created by man himself. Now in India they say we got too many monkeys. Why? Because first deforestation. Monkeys had to run away, find a place somewhere else. And secondly, so much hunting, especially during the British days, because they were very fond of sport. And the result was the leopards were killed. They were the natural enemy of the monkeys. So what we do is to upset the balance of nature, and then we suffer from it ourselves. And honestly, that's one of the reasons I would say man should not interfere with nature as far as possible. And this is happening in many, many places. But there are problems which you have to solve in the very best possible way and with the least amount of cruelty. But that is not entirely for selfish purposes, which is quite a different thing. Sometimes you may have to put out an animal for its own sake. That also you have to do.
Question. What evidence have you to suppose that animals are capable of intelligence, as you suggest, and an emotional life?
Certainly animals have far more intelligence than we give them credit for. You read the enormous number of animal books that are now coming of people who have looked after animals. There is the animal, for example, the otter. I have been reading a book of a man who has been looking after the otter. Elephants. You read a book by a man called Elephant Bill, who worked in Burma. He was a hunter. He gave up hunting because he began to realize how wonderful these creatures were. And he became a lover of animals. And you can see everywhere, the very fact that you have pet dogs and in your homes, which you are fond of, shows that you accept some intelligence and some emotion in them. Otherwise, why do you have them as pets? Because you find that companionship. Sometimes people say, well, I feel as much for the tomato as you feel for the dog. But, well, it's ridiculous, because I say to them, in that case, have a tomato as your companion instead of a dog. Well, you can, of course, you must see intelligence is not equal to that of man. That I agree. But it has more intelligence than we give them credit for. And if we love them, our love alone will bring out much more out of them. Do you know a large number of animals become less wild by the love we give them? There is no doubt that this is absolutely truth. It's been said there was a time, at one time, when the lion was a tame animal. Well, one can see signs of it, because there are a lot of books written about people who have brought up lions and how affectionate they become. Well, you see that. So, although you may say I speak glowingly about animals, certainly they are natural and they are beautiful, and they give their affection unstintingly, and they have complete trust in you. All these beautiful qualities you do see in them. They are as beautiful as children, aren't they? I think they are. Why do we love children so much? I don't see much difference between the two. The animal has to be fed.
So we move hearty way to thank Mrs. Arundel. She's come along a long way to speak to us. She was here about 30 years ago. I hope it won't be 30 years before you come again.
Well, if it is, I'll see you next life. Those animal welfare organizations or individuals who would like to be in touch with the Animal Welfare Board in India, you can please write to them.